You've heard it said on this podcast before that we don't make the adjustment. We provide a force and the body makes the adjustment. And so in that vein of thinking, I think it's important to think about force and the force that we provide. And so a couple of weekends ago at the Meeting of the Minds, I had the opportunity to go into the Force Plate Lab at Northwest College of Chiropractic. And I've been in that one the year before. I got to go into the Force Plate Lab and at Cleveland Chiropractic College in Kansas City. And of course, when I worked at Life University, we had a force plate lab as well. And so I've seen a few different force plate labs now. And what seems to be true of all of them is that their findings are pretty consistent. And so when we think about what we find looking at force plates and looking at adjustments, there's certainly a lot more information that can be gained by doing more work and more experimentation with them. But some very basic principles begin to emerge that I think can be helpful, especially since in this situation in Minnesota, I was in the lab with Charlie Martin, Randy Johnson, and Tom Sherman. And between those three guys, that is a lot of years of experience. And so the Force Plate Lab people get excited when they get doctors with that kind of experience because mostly they're looking at students. But you can start to compare student profiles to experienced doctor profiles, and you start to pick up some subtleties and some differences. So one of the first things that they've mentioned is that they tell the students that they need to be able to produce 800 newtons of force. I believe the measurement is newtons, so I'm going to say newtons, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So 800 is like this benchmark that if they can produce 800, then they have a good chance of getting cavitation out of the joint and getting a movement out of it. When you look at experienced doctors, when the four of us went, We generally didn't have any trouble creating 800 newtons of force. And in fact, we could produce profiles anywhere between 800 and 1200 newtons of force. So the ability to create that kind of a thrust, and it kind of sent a basic idea down. The one exception was Tom Sherman, when he did his basic adjustment on somebody, he came in at about 500 newtons of force. The interesting thing about that is that most students at 500 newtons of force are probably not going to be moving much. They're going to be failing in their adjustment. And yet, Tom Sherman has no problem making an adjustment with 500. And so we started looking at that going, well, how is that? Well, he is able to do things like patient relaxation, things that students don't know how to create. But there was another thing that we pulled out of that profile that was very interesting, because when he did that adjustment, he did something that the other three of us did the same thing when we were given the scenario of adjusting a child. They said, show us what your infant adjustment or your child adjustment would look like. And the other three of us were down in that range, 500-600 newtons. And we all did this other adaptation. And so what was interesting that we picked up on immediately is that in order to produce that kind of an adjustment, you increase the preload. So on a typical adjustment, say we're doing an 800 newton adjustment, it's pretty typical we would be somewhere about 125, 150 newtons of preload followed by a thrust. When you compare that to the infant one, or a lower amplitude thrust, or lower force, what you find is that you increase the preload to probably about 200 to 250 newtons of preload. Then you make a thrust that's about 500 to 600. So you realize there that your preload is now like half the adjustment, half the depth, half the amplitude is in the preload. Whereas at 800, if you're only at 125, you're like 1/8 of the adjustment is in the preload. So you use a higher preload to set it up, and that allows you to have a small, that's what gives the appearance of a smaller thrust, because there's that higher preload in there. There's another important thing that happened, and that is the time of the adjustment for all of us got longer. In fact, it probably came close to doubling. So that gives the appearance that you're giving a slower adjustment. So it looks like a slower low amplitude adjustment, and yet it's probably still more than you might think just by looking. And so as we looked at these force applications, we began to think, you know, there's more to this than we sometimes think. We were even told, you guys kind of do this instinctively, that you've just learned to do it this way, but you probably haven't really thought about what it is you're doing. And if if you think about what it is you're doing, you can put more effort into doing it that way and probably make the results even better. And so with thinking about these force profiles, we did one that was very similar where we had he told us to imagine that you're adjusting osteoporotic grandma. And again, it was a very similar thing where we're going to use a little more preload, we're going to use a low amplitude thrust, and we're going to use a slower or a longer duration of thrust period so that the force is given more slowly. And when you think about, well, what does that allow? Well, in grandma and in child, we have kind of similar scenarios. Difference being the child primarily does not have muscular resistance. And so the force is going directly into the joint because there's no muscular resistance to it. In osteoporotic grandma, we still have a little bit of muscular resistance, but what we get is a change in the disc where as she ages, she's got less fluid capacity. And so her discs are a little more turgid, they're thick, they're slower. Well, what does that translate into? That means that her discs are capable of change, but they're not capable of rapid change. They need a little bit more time. So by giving that longer duration thrust, we give it a little more time to make that change and to make a more effective adjustment in that way. And so one of the things that was brought to our attention is they said, you know, students often struggle to get up to 800 newtons and get that force. He said, but the thing they struggle with the most is being able to adjust well at low amplitude. And so that was not something that I expected him to say, but when I thought about it, I thought, you know, that probably does make sense. I remember when I was told one time that if you want to evaluate a drummer, the best drummers can drum really well while drumming quietly. I remember being told a good singer can sing with good quality while singing quietly. Anybody can be loud. It takes skill to be quiet. I thought, you know, that's so funny because that's translating into this kind of thing as well, that your first thing is you try to be good with volume, but then when you want to be really good, you got to learn to be good with less volume. And so it's kind of like we spend the beginning of our career trying to develop the strength, develop the speed, develop the skill, and then after that, you start trying to figure out how to take it back away while still maintaining the quality. And I think that's an important thing to think about because that's what's going to give the adjustment versatility so that it can be adapted to the patient's needs and not be a one size fits all adjustment, because it's easy to get to that point where you have something that works. And so then you just want to just ride that horse right into the ground because I've got something that works and I'm just going to apply it to everybody. But really, to be a great adjuster, which is what I saw with three Gonstead fellows on the force plate table, is that they all had versatility to their adjustments. They could change the length of the duration of the adjustment. They could change the amplitude of the adjustment. They could change the preload. They were able to make these adaptations. And each time we were doing it with three adjustments measured side by side. And the other thing that you could see was consistency. So if they said, I'm going to do a lower amplitude adjustment right around 500, they would give three adjustments and all three would peak right around 500. They had this consistency to it as well. And so that's when you know somebody has some precision, is that they can't just give a good adjustment, but they can repeat it and they can repeat it in short succession. So I think thinking about force in that way, it got me thinking about something I hadn't really thought about before. And it was just that application of force, because if as they say, we simply provide the force and the patient gives the adjustment, then a patient's going to adapt better, and they're going to, and adjustment is adaptation. They're going to adapt and they're going to make an adjustment better based on the application of the proper force for that patient. And proper force for patient requires the doctor to have adaptation, to be able to adapt the adjustment to make it be the proper force and to have good feel for what that requires. And so that just kind of puts us in a little bit different state of mind thinking about the force that we apply. And so I know a lot of people listen to this podcast as they're on their way to work. And so as you're going to work, it's a great thing to think about, is to think about what force are you applying to each and every patient, and how are you controlling those factors of depth, speed, duration, preload. And even those factors, I had never really thought about them until being on the force plate and realizing that preload is actually a very important part of it that I don't usually think about. But the preload does vary and should vary, and it's going to vary based on the adjustment you intend to give. And so what might be counterintuitive is that if you're going to give a lighter adjustment, you probably want to give a little more preload before giving that lighter adjustment. That's what makes it possible. And that's probably why students have trouble working at a lower amplitude, is because they don't know how to give a good preload and increase that pressure in the line of drive and have it set up so they could just quickly move that thing in with a low amplitude thrust. And so that's what I would challenge everybody, just to really think about those factors of your adjustment on each patient and become aware of what maybe where you're really good at it and maybe where you're not, and rely on your strengths, but at the same time try to work on your weaknesses so they don't hold you back either. So it was just an interesting and very good thought to see the force plate like that and to see these patterns and to recognize that that we have a lot of control over the force we give, and the force we give determines the adjustment we give, and the adjustment we give determines the adjustment the patient makes. And so it's all very tightly connected, and force really is a huge part of that whole equation. When we talk about force application, I think it's also important to consider line of drive and the open joint. And so this is something that I was talking with Dr. Ian about, because we were talking about the need to adjust into the openness, and that a lot of students, based on the school they go to, or maybe even what influences they have, are subtly taught to find some kind of joint lockout. And so Dr. Ian said he'd have a lot of students ask him, well, how do you get the joint lockout like that? And he tried to explain to them that we don't use joint lockout, that it truly Gonstead adjustment is going to be given into the open space, the neutrality of the joint, which to a lot of students is puzzling, because they don't know how to get a joint like that to move. They think, how are you going to create a cavitation? You got to have that binding of locking the joint out. And so I do think that that's a very sticky, troubling point for people. Trying to get their mentality around that that's probably one of the first and early hurdles to get over, that if a person never quite makes it over that, then their adjusting probably always suffers just a little bit because of it. You're not going to bind the joint up. You're going to open the joint up, and then you're going to move it. And that requires patient relaxation. That requires stabilization. It requires a lot of things that, if you're doing a diversified type move, you don't need those skills. You don't need to find the open joint. You don't need to be able to get the patient to relax. You don't need to have good timing of your adjustment. You can just go whenever you're ready. And so once you go into that mode, it demands a higher level of understanding and performance to get there. And so one of the things that Dr. Ian did is he was demonstrating an infant adjustment on the knuckle of my hand. Like my middle finger knuckle. And he said, I can open the joint and go, he just used one finger, and he said, I can open the joint and I can go right here. And that's an adjustment there. And he showed how much play there was in the joint. And he said, you see how much that moves. And so if somebody's simply observing that, they think, man, you're really moving that deep. And he said, but it doesn't feel like I'm moving it deep at all. And then he said, or I could do this. And he took the knuckle. It's kind of hard to explain, but he pushed that bone up towards the bone adjacent to it. And he kind of created a little bit of pressure against it. And then he sat down. He said, if I mentally focus on setting the bone to the bone next to it and creating a change in relationship, not just creating movement and making noise, but if I'm trying to alter the relationship of these two bones on each other, then you can feel the resistance that happens in the joint itself, and that lets you know where to go. And the joint is still open, but as you push down, the amplitude is much less, and the accomplishment of the adjustment happens much earlier. So you have a lower amplitude thrust. You don't see as much, and as the person feeling it, it feels way better. And so this kind of brings you back to the point of really thinking about, in an open joint space, we are also setting the bone to the adjacent bone. And so you really want to be able to feel that connection between them. And I think that this is something very subtle that good adjusters do. I think that most if not all of the Gonstead fellows, if you were to feel them adjust you, they have a very subtle ability to make sure that bone that they're adjusting has a connection to the one next to it, and that as they're making an adjustment, they're altering the relationship between those two bones and affecting the disc, and not simply moving a bone and creating a cavitation, because that moving the bone and creating a cavitation might be the first step in the process of learning, but it's definitely not the last step in the process of learning. Once you get to where you get a feel for how they move, then it's really a precision of setting on the one next to it. And so once you start setting to another bone, now you suddenly have the need to control your depth. So you're not just setting it as deep as you can, but you're really making, you're looking for a perfect place of positioning between the two bones. And so you're controlling your depth and you're not going super deep. Sometimes you're pulling up the brakes and you're hitting it. You're coming in a little short and not going as deep. You're also very cognizant of different vectors that maybe this adjustment needs a little bit of rotation, but it doesn't need a lot of rotation. Maybe it needs a little wedging, but not a lot. I mean, I still see, if I watch on YouTube and stuff, I still see a lot of people using a lot of lateral bending on thoracics, and they just don't go that way. That's not, the ribs prevent it. And so if you use lateral bending on a thoracic, you will get a cavitation. But in most cases, it's the facet joint on the opposite side that's cavitating, and it's not really the disc. And so to get a good deep adjustment in the disc means you actually want to maintain mostly neutrality and not set with all that rotation. Some people do it as a torque, and they think it needs to be a lot of torque. The torque on a thoracic is very minimal and only at the very end. It's not a, you don't preload torque and then set with more torque. That's a huge mistake. It puts too much binding into the joint. And so a lot of times there's these simple little things like this that people start out with when they're adjusting, and they just develop a bad habit because for some reason it makes sense to them, or they saw somebody else do it, or they're just so desperate to feel like they accomplished something. And I get that. I remember being there, that you just feel like anything that makes a noise makes me feel like I at least am getting somewhat better at this horribly difficult thing to learn. But those are not great adjustments for the patient. And so I still say one of the best ways that I learned how to adjust, and probably because I learned how not to adjust, was by being the patient and feeling different adjustments. And when I felt people do things and it felt horrible and it hurt, I just made a mental note of, well, I may not know how to do this, but I know that's not it. And so I just started saying, well, don't do it that way, don't do it that way, don't do it that way, until what was left was like, well, this is all that's left. I guess that's how you do it. And started. And that was like the beginning steps of figuring some of the stuff out. And so I do think it's important to be the patient. I think if you go to a seminar, you should have good doctors adjust you. You actually should have all doctors adjust you, because like I said, even the bad ones are going to teach you something. So you should get adjusted by people, and you should get a feel for how things move. There's really, even to this day, there's no other way to know than to feel. Like if I have a, when I've had students who are like, can you help me with my adjusting? Usually what I do at the very beginning is I have them set up on me and even thrust on me. And if I know where my subluxations are, or if I'm having something, I go ahead and thrust on it. Because for me to really evaluate where they're at and what their strong suits are and what their weak parts are, I've got to feel it. Just watching it won't cut it. And so if I can't watch it and figure out what's really happening, then there's a good chance as a student, you're not going to pick it up either. And so it's a good idea just to feel what's happening. It kind of gives you a roadmap of where you want to go and what it should be like. And those are my tips. But I think that it's very important that we talk more about the fact that with Gonstead adjusting, we adjust into the neutral space. We do not create binding. And it is so easy to create that binding. And there are people who, they might give a good lumbar adjustment in the open space, a good thoracic adjustment in the open space, and then they get to the cervicals, and because they're struggling, they just want to create a little bit of tension, just a little bit of something, so they can feel like they can move it. And so it does, it's not an all or nothing kind of thing. You got to evaluate each and every one of your adjustments and how you do them to make sure that you're not creating some kind of a lockout to try to force cavitation, but instead you're just feeling how the joint naturally moves. You're finding its open spot. You're giving good stabilization to the segment below. You create patient relaxation with your hands. You wait for the perfect timing, and when the timing comes, you make that adjustment as smoothly and as cleanly as you can, so it's as least traumatic for the patient as it can possibly be. And those are kind of the goals of making a good adjustment, if you could pull it off, and you spend the rest of your life trying to make that happen.